Ruth Klugman was Jackson Pollock's mistress in the year before his fatal car crash in 1956, and she claims she watched the artist paint his final canvas just before he gave it to her as a memento of his love. The authenticity of the painting remains a question as Red, Black, and Silver goes into auction this September. Leslie M. Bloom, a contributing writer at Vanity Fair, has written an article about the affair called The Canvas and the Triangle, and she joins us now. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
Some of our longtime listeners will remember that Ruth Klugman was once a guest on the show, but for the rest of our audience, who was she?
Ruth was a colorful figure in the art world, and in 1956, she was a 26-year-old art student and was new to New York City. And one evening, met Jackson Pollock at Cedar Tavern, and the rest was history. They immediately began an affair. Through the course of the spring and then into the summer, the affair intensified, and Jackson Pollock was married to Lee Krasner, who was also an abstract expressionist artist, and their marriage was kind of devolving at that point. And Lee, reportedly enraged by the affair, left for Europe for the summer, and Ruth moved into Jackson's house in the Springs.
Didn't Klugman's description of their first encounter differ from how the artist Audrey Flack describes it?
Well, Ruth, in her book Love Affair, which was a memoir that first came out in 1974, said that the meeting had been incidental. She had gone there, she claimed, to meet an artist whom she was representing in an upcoming show. Ruth was also kind of moonlighting in a sort of mid-range gallery on 56th Street at the time. And she said that she was just in the bar with other friends, and when Jackson walked in, the whole atmosphere became electrified, and she was introduced to him, and it was... they were mutually engrossed. Audrey Flack, on the other hand, who was a young artist at the same time, says that Ruth had befriended her and had asked her, who are the most famous artists who I need to know in New York City, and in what number, 1, 2, and 3? And Audrey, who was, you know, steeped in this world, she said, well, Jackson Pollock, Franz Klein, and Bill de Kooning.
And Ruth Klugman wound up having affairs with all three.
Well, she definitely, Jackson and de Kooning, and it's questionable whether or not the third, but she did.
But Andy Warhol even said he exchanged kisses with her. Came as a big surprise to me.
Yes, and I suppose Jasper Johns would have been a surprise to you as well for similar reasons. Ruth was described to me very artfully by de Kooning biographer Mark Stevens as a big game hunter. And so she really, she loved artists. She loved great artists. And Jasper Johns, when he talked to me for this article, said, you know, Ruth had a genuine erotic affection for well-known artists.
And she wasn't alone. I actually used to hang out at the Cedar, the original Cedar, after Pollock was dead. Mm-hmm. But people used to point to the men's room door that he supposedly pulled off in a drunken rage. And there were a number of groupies there waiting for the big names to show up. So in her case, she just did better than some. What was Pollock's career like when they met? Wasn't he going through a bad period?
He was in pretty tough shape in 1956. And, he had had a show in 1955, and it had been described in the press as eulogistic. And people who were his one-time supporters were worried that he had, quote, lost his stuff. And he was drinking really heavily at that point, and he was kind of in a state of total non-productivity.
Well, he felt trapped, didn't he, by the style that he'd created, was looking for ways to get out of it?
I don't know about that, but I know that a lot has been written about the fact that he felt trapped, period, and some people question, was that, you know, the marriage? Was he trying to break out into new forms? But he was in the greatest of headspace, and it was reflected by his absence from his studio.
And was Krasner aware of Ruth's presence?
She became aware of Ruth's presence and was obviously not very happy about it. And
although she was not the first person that Jackson Pollock had an affair with.
It's, you know, biographers differ on, you know, the extent of his infidelities and the consummations involved besides Ruth. But his affair with Ruth was very public. He liked to show her off. They went out dancing. They were out in New York. They went out in the Hamptons together. So it was not a hidden liaison.
So how does she say she came to acquire this painting?
So Lee had gone to Europe, And Ruth moved. Lee and Jackson had a pretty farmhouse that they bought in the Springs, which is a hamlet in East Hampton. And when Lee left, Ruth promptly moved in, some people say, on the same day. And it was there are various accounts of how that time actually went. Was it, you know, this beautiful affair? Was it fraught? It sounds like it was pretty fraught. And Jackson didn't stop drinking, and Ruth would recount in Love Affair that she was desperate to get him to start painting again. So she says that she had a couple of canvas boards, not stretch canvases, boards. That actually becomes an important detail later on when we get to the authentication battle. There were school boards that she had begun painting on, and she brought one out to the back lawn, she says, and she said, "Show me how you make a Jackson Pollock painting." And she said she bought painting from her own studio and from his studio and asked him to demonstrate. And she said that he complied, and he created this little Jackson Pollock painting. And for your audience who is, you know, probably has not seen this work, it's tiny. It's 24 by 20 inches. And it has sort of a black oval shape in the middle, and it's surrounded by kind of a loose knot of red swirls, layers of red, black, white, and silver paint. And that's how she said that it was created.
Well, obviously very small for Jackson Pollock, who worked quite big,
yeah,
generally.
True.
Had she been showing this painting to other people all along after Pollock died in a car crash? She was also in the car when the car crashed, didn't she?
So,
wasn't she?
Yes, she was, famously, actually. The painting was allegedly created in July 1956, and, you know, some weeks later, on August 11th, she and Jackson and a friend of hers, a young receptionist from a beauty parlor with whom Ruth was close, Edith Metzger, they were going to a party, and Jackson had been drinking heavily that day, gin instead of beer, which he had usually been drinking. So, I mean, he was really, like, in the bog. And he lost control of the car, and he died. Edith Metzger died. Ruth miraculously survived.
My guest is Leslie Bloom, whose article, The Canvas and the Triangle, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair magazine. You mentioned that Ruth wrote a memoir 20 years after Pollock's death called Love Affair, a memoir of Jackson Pollock. She didn't mention the painting, did she?
She did not mention the painting in the 1974 edition, and that would end up creating a very considerable challenge for her in the authentication battle that was going to lie ahead for her. And there is a lot of rich detail about her life with Jackson. You know, it was like, you know, we made a salad and a good steak that night. We, you know, I bought cigarettes in the New York Times in Grand Central, but the painting itself is not mentioned. And later on, the authentication committee, official authentication committee, would question her about this and say, why was this important and moving moment not documented? And, you know, the onus fell on her to explain that.
And how did she explain it?
There were a variety of reasons, and this mostly took place in sort of legal correspondence back and forth between Ruth and an authentication board, which was set up by the Pollock-Krasner Foundation. And a variety of reasons. And the first one, you know, was that there wasn't really a market for Jackson Pollock in the same way that, you know, it became later. And then also she said, you know, that she had had her own life to live. She kind of forgot about it. And then in, you know, what seemed to me the most telling detail, she said, you know, I thought that it would be discredited if I thought, you know, if I let people know that it was for me, because as has been said about me, if she wants a Pollock, she should buy a Pollock. And this was a statement that was famously uttered by Jackson Pollock's widow, Lee Krasner.
Now, was Lee Krasner on the authentication board?
Lee Krasner, after Jackson Pollock died, became the executor of his estate, and she became in charge of authentication processes until her death in 1984.
So she, you know, we might think that she's a biased observer here.
Well, she actually never personally saw this painting, because Ruth never brought it forward until after Lee's death, and that probably wasn't a coincidence. Many people with whom I spoke say that Ruth really just Well, to backtrack a little bit, you know, Lee, after Jackson's death, decided, you know, that they needed to set up a committee to authenticate his huge body of work to create what's known as a catalogue raisonné. And that is an authoritative compendium of an artist's body of work. So she was one of the heads of that committee.
And there have been a lot of counterfeits or paintings that have been questioned.
Yeah, actually, the vast majority of works that have been brought to that were brought to that initial authentication committee and to the later authentication board, most of them were considered not real. And there's actually a known body of Pollock considered fakes that are floating around that's in the hundreds. It's like, you know, 500 or 600 people who are some of the experts in the field will know the exact number. And, you know, they're, you know, ID'd. So from that pool, you know, it just keeps circulating over and over again.
We have another case recently in 2002. Filmmaker Alex Matter found roughly 30 Pollock-like paintings in his family possessions. And they were brought to Pollock Krasner to be authenticated. What happened there?
Well, Alex Matter, his parents had been close with the Pollocks, with Lee Krasner and Jackson Pollock in the 1950s.
His parents were both famous artists.
They were. And Mercedes, I believe, was a visual artist. And Alex himself was a filmmaker. And he discovered this cache of 30-something paintings in an East Hampton warehouse. And they were Pollock-like. And he said, my God, you know, my parents had this stash of paintings, and he brought them forward to be authenticated, and he approached a former member of the official Pollock Krasner Authentication Board, which had been it had been around since 1990 through 1995, and then disbanded. And Dr. Landau, who was one of four members of that board, she looked at the Matter paintings and she said, "I believe these are authentic." So that didn't sit very well with the other members of the authentication board, former members of the authentication board.
But there are ways of figuring it out. Years ago, I spoke to a conservator who, in fact, when the big Pollock show was at the, was it Museum of Modern Art? And she said that there are all sorts of telltale signs. It's pretty easy to spot whether Pollock did it or somebody else just by the way the lines flow and the flow of the paint and all sorts of other things.
Well, Mr. Lippitt, before going on to that, it's important to mention, though, that just because one person from the former authentication committee decreed the Matter paintings authentic, they were not ever authenticated by the official Pollock Krasner Foundation. You know, the other former members of the board came out and, you know, they have not officially authenticated the paintings. As far as the Pollock Krasner Foundation is concerned, they're fakes.
And now we have this situation where a counterfeiter has popped up at the very respected Nodler Gallery, selling paintings to the Nodler Gallery. I'm wondering whether any painting that's up for sale these days is authentic.
It's a tricky process, and I think, you know, if you talk to the Pollock Krasner Foundation, you know, the way that they have always evaluated artworks in terms of authentication has been through what they call, you know, through connoisseurship, through scholarly analysis, and they rely on a body of well-known Pollock scholars and dealers to evaluate the visual qualities, the quality of the paint, what they know to be Pollocks.
So when it comes to authenticating an art piece, is the lack of a final decision the same as a rejection?
Well, yes, to a certain extent. I mean, it's, the gray area is not helpful to people who are attempting to.
So when this comes up for auction, either it will go for a very low amount.
I'm not saying that. If an authenticating body declines to authenticate, it doesn't mean that the work is not necessarily authentic. It just means that they feel that they don't have enough information to authenticate it. But what it does mean in practical terms is that an auction house is unlikely to attribute it officially, which may change the market value.
Well, Ruth came up with a legal pamphlet to prove the painting was authentic. Wasn't the painting put through some tests?
There is, Ruth put the painting through quite a few tests, as did Phillips DePuri, which is the auction house, which is scheduled to take the painting to auction on September 20th. And the science seems pretty astonishingly on the side of authentication. So Ruth had something known as fractal analysis done on the painting. Now, the Pollock Krasner board used fractal analysis to discount the Matter paintings. On the day that findings were released, saying, you know, that the fractal patterns in the Matter paintings did not match patterns in Pollock paintings, Ruth called the scientist in charge of doing that particular analysis and asked him to look at her painting, Red, Black, and Silver, and he agreed. And he said that he did find the same fractal patterns in Ruth's painting, in the Red, Black, and Silver, as in authenticated Jackson Pollock's. Now, only 8 out of 97 paintings that have been brought to him over the years have borne those patterns. And she's also had testing done by pigment specialist, James Martin in Orion Analytics, which is a very respected firm, said that he didn't find any anachronistic materials that would preclude its presence from existing in 1956. But that none of the scientists who perform tests will say that this proves conclusively that it was a Pollock. They just say that it doesn't bar it from being a Pollock.
Well, Ruth is dead. Mm-hmm. And so are all of the other people involved in the case. Will that be make it easier to finally come up with a determination? And who gains from the sale of who owns the painting now?
Ruth's executor and two trustees who are in charge of a trust in her name. The money will go to that particular trust, and it sounds to me like they are going to do something either philanthropic or educational with the proceeds. And, you know, it's unclear, you know, so for instance, a lot of the people who were members of the former authentication committee for Paula Krasner, they're older now. And, you know, so for instance, what happens in
but
issues
they're very close to Lee, most of them.
They were very close to Lee, handpicked and designated by her to carry on authentication matters in the cases of her and Pollock's estate. And the question becomes, you know, what happens, you know, after they pass on? You know, who's going to authenticate Pollock works? And it's interesting when you talk to people from auction houses. You know, I interviewed people at length from Phillips, and one of their representatives said, well, it becomes a community consensus. And, you know, that attributions for older works of art change all the time. And, you know, you don't have eyewitnesses around for, you know, old masters.
They did that with Rembrandt. A committee went around the world and said, this painting is authentic, this one isn't. In some cases, some pretty great paintings were decided were not by Rembrandt himself.
Right, and hundreds of years after the fact. And so the fascinating question is, as this painting goes to auction, is what will the community consensus be?
Now, why do you think Ruth became so obsessed with proving that the painting was authentic? She died before it was sold.
I think, you know, I mean, obsession is, you know, absolutely the right word. I mean, this was a 25-year authentication battle. I mean, she never gave up. I mean, it started in 1992 when she first started vying to have the painting authenticated. And by the time she died in 2010, when I knew her, she was still exceedingly determined. And I always had a theory that a lot of it had to do with legitimizing the painting was almost like a vote for legitimizing herself and as an artist in the community.
Leslie Bloom's article, The Canvas and the Triangle, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.